overwhelmingly the entirety of our caucus, except for a few whose judgment I respect, support the vision of Joe Biden.
U.S. lawmakers consider $1 trillion infrastructure package. It's Tuesday, September 28th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Chris Cascao in Washington. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Afghan family resettles in U.S. Australian teens track COVID-19. Returning a looted artifact. A cryptocurrency lifeline. Cycling for women's rights. It's all on today's VOA Asia. A time of intensity. That's what U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, a Democrat, is calling this week in Congress as lawmakers are expected to vote on a $1 trillion bipartisan infrastructure bill, but also consider the Democrat-backed $3.5 trillion sweeping social spending package, core to the Biden administration agenda. Michelle Quinn reports.
The Biden administration's domestic agenda faces a major test this week. Congressional leaders are negotiating over the timing of voting on a bipartisan infrastructure bill, which would increase spending for roads, bridges, and other projects. Some progressive members of the Democratic Party say they won't vote for that $1 trillion package unless the bigger $3.5 trillion social spending bill, President Joe Biden's Build Back Better, also comes up for a vote. The smaller bill is likely to come up first, and the cost of the bigger package will likely be cut as negotiations proceed, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi told ABC's This Week.
This isn't about moderates versus progressives. Overwhelmingly, the entirety of our caucus, except for a few whose judgment I respect, support the vision of Joe Biden, and we will make progress on it this week.
Yet another issue looms. The government could start running out of money sometime in mid-October, according to a recent report. Congress will have to raise the debt limit so that it can borrow money to pay for a wide array of spending already approved, including the military and Social Security. Last week, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, a Republican, said the Republicans are not going to help the Democrats raise the debt ceiling, arguing that the Democrats should pass it on their own since they are poised to pass the $3.5 trillion bill, which many Republicans oppose.
Don't play Russian roulette with our economy. Step up and raise the debt ceiling to cover all that you've been engaged in all year long.
But much is at stake. A partial government shutdown could happen later this week if Congress doesn't pass spending legislation. The Senate is expected next to consider a bill which passed the House that would extend spending limits, raise the debt, and provide aid to communities hit by natural disasters and to Afghan refugees. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
We invite you to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Malaysia pledges spending and green goals in five-year economic plan. China tells effeminate male celebrities to man up. North Korea says hope is alive for peace and summit with South. China's Xi warns of grim Taiwan situation in letter to opposition. Indian farmers give renewed push to demand for scrapping farm laws. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the VOAnews.com website. You're listening to VOA Asia on this Tuesday. The dispute between Afghanistan's new Taliban rulers and its former government over who should speak at the UN's annual meeting of world leaders is over. Nobody delivered an address. The Taliban challenged the credentials of the ambassador from Afghanistan's former government and asked to represent the country at the General Assembly's high-level meeting. But the assembly committee that decides on such challenges never met. Nimatullah Haghori is an Afghan father of seven and a recipient of the Special Immigrant Visa, or SIV. He had one-way tickets to the U.S. for himself and his family on August 16th, but one day before their trip, the Afghanistan government collapsed. The family finally made its way to America nearly 2 weeks later. Anush Avetishyan met with them in Washington, D.C., and has their story.
Nimatullah Haghori's thoughts keep going back to Afghanistan on August 15th, when the government collapsed and the Taliban took over his country. Haghori, a special immigrant visa holder, was scheduled to depart Afghanistan with his family just one day later, but the Taliban canceled their flight.
It was a very bad day.
He spent 12 desperate and traumatic days in Kabul before getting a flight out.
Unfortunately, when I came to Kabul airport, it was at 11 p.m. With my family. I couldn't expect that there was too many people with, in my eyes, three kids were died because of too many people, 20 rush, and one lady was dead.
Nimat Haghori filmed these shots, oppressive heat, crowds of people, panic and screaming. Many were injured by barbed wire used on top of fences around the Kabul airport.
My all family was crying because they were all injured. My two, my one daughter and one my son, they were walking from the wire, you know, the wire, from no shoes in her feet, their feet.
When the family reached the entrance to the airport, Haghori had to leave part of his family there and go back into the sea of people looking for his two sons and nine-year-old daughter who got lost in the crowd.
I thought that she died because I already I saw three kids they were died. Got 6 hours that I found him and my two kids again. So when I saw my daughter, he was alive. I was very crying. I was very happy. I thanks God that he is alive.
When Haghori found his 16-year-old son, the boy was unconscious.
He was dropped on the ground, and I took him my body and took him outside from the people. The people was taller than him. He was small, and he was on backside of the people and front side of the people. There was people was like dim, like this. So Anibal was there, was breathing because there was no air, and the sun was shining. So I took him to outside and gave him water. After 1 hour, he was breathing.
It took Haghori 4 days to make it inside the airport. By then, his wife and four of their children managed to get on a plane and were on their way first to Qatar and then to the U.S. The whole family finally reunited 12 days later in Washington, D.C., where they were staying at a hotel with other Afghan refugees while awaiting more permanent accommodations. Other refugees have been redirected to military bases in Virginia, Texas, Wisconsin, and New Jersey. The children don't want to talk about what happened back home, but they're happily anticipating a new life in the U.S.
I really want to start playing football with my brothers, so going to school and finding some friend. Because I'm really alone here.
While they were waiting accommodation, the International Organization for Migration has provided Haghori and his family with food. Volunteers and locals are bringing items to the hotel. Most refugees arrived in the U.S. with nothing. Haghori is worried about their future and that the Taliban will harm his relatives who are still in Afghanistan.
They know my father, they know my brothers. I left Afghanistan. After this, they were searching the family. Instead of me, he will take them. He will take my father, my brother.
Haghori says the children are being hurt most by the turmoil. They start every day with a walk together. They breathe in, they talk, they learn to live without fear. Haghori and his family were relocated to California, where they will begin to build a new life. And the main thing Haghori tries to teach his children there is that the worst is behind them. Anusha Vitisyan for VOA News, Washington.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, teenagers in Australia build one of the country's most visited COVID-19 tracking websites. Happening now in Asia, China's foreign ministry said on Monday that the return of Huawei executive Meng Wanzhou was because of the unremitting efforts of the Chinese government. Beijing also said two Canadians who were released confessed guilt before being granted bail for medical reasons. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. Instagram is putting a hold on the development of Instagram Kids, geared towards children under 13, so it can address concerns about the vulnerability of younger users. Adam Mosseri, the head of Instagram, wrote in a blog post Monday that a delay will give the company time to work with parents, experts, policymakers, and regulators to listen to their concerns and to demonstrate the value and importance of this project for younger teens online today. Three teenagers have been revealed as the brains behind one of Australia's most authoritative COVID-19 tracking sites. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
In the pandemic, numbers are everything. New South Wales Premier Gladys Berejiklian is one of millions of Australians tracking the vaccination rates, hoping to get the numbers high enough that lockdowns can end. She gave an update in Sydney on Monday.
Pleasingly, we've officially passed the 85% first dose vaccination in New South Wales, which is just outstanding. And we're looking forward, obviously, to seeing that number continue. So can I please encourage everybody in New South Wales to come forward and get vaccinated?
Tracking a mountain of statistics is complex and time-consuming. One of the most comprehensive COVID-19 monitoring sites in Australia is run by three teenagers in Melbourne. The website COVIDBaseAU has been collating coronavirus statistics since April 2021, breaking down Australian and global data on infections, hospitalisations, deaths and vaccinations. It was a project that started as a hobby for teenagers interested in coding and the media. Their website has become a trusted source of information. The site is run by 15-year-old Jack and his two friends.
It's important in providing a sort of centralized and easy way to access a lot of the data. And I think in making sure that we track the data every single day, we're sort of able to give a lot of context behind all the data, which some government sites might not be able to do.
For months, the boys wanted to be anonymous, but they were revealed as the brains behind COVIDBaseAU when they posted a picture on Twitter after they'd been vaccinated. Jack and his friends say that despite the demands of their tracking website, they're keeping up with their schoolwork.
At the beginning, firstly, we sort of just thought that people might not find us as reliable if we were sort of kids. But we have seen that Australia's Health Minister, Greg Hunt, he congratulated us, and I saw Victoria's chief health officer, he retweeted our thing, so it has been pretty special to see that happen.
Millions of Australians in Canberra, Melbourne and Sydney remain in lockdown as Delta variant infections continue to rise. About 97,500 coronavirus cases have been recorded in Australia since the pandemic began. 1,231 people have died. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Hong Kong still has outstanding advantages as a business hub, according to a government report released on Monday. The territory's financial secretary, Paul Chan, said Hong Kong had a favorable business environment and a bright future despite years of political and social unrest. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Continuing now with VOA Asia, an ancient tablet displaying parts of the Epic of Gilgamesh that was stolen from Iraq 30 years ago was returned to that country last week. The handover ceremony took place in Washington. VOA's Sirwan Kejo has more in this story.
A 3,600-year-old clay tablet that was looted from an Iraqi museum 30 years ago has now returned to Iraq. During a ceremony held September 23rd at the Smithsonian's National Museum of the American Indian in Washington, the U.S. formally handed over the Gilgamesh Dream Tablet to its country of origin, Iraq. Officials considered this repatriation a victory over those who mutilate heritage.
This restitution is about returning to Iraq an element essential to the soul of the nation, to the soul of one of the oldest nations.
U.S. authorities seized the tablet in 2019, saying it had entered the U.S. illegally. The artifact was acquired by the company Hobby Lobby in 2014 for display in the Museum of the Bible in Washington. The tablet features cuneiform inscriptions in Sumerian, the language of the ancient Mesopotamian civilization. It also includes parts of the Epic of Gilgamesh, which is considered one of the oldest works in narrative poetry in the world. The tablet is one of nearly 17,000 looted antiquities the U.S. has agreed to return to Iraq.
We're happy that there is a legal framework that protects our artifacts. And more importantly, there's a will by all the administrations concerned to implement the legal framework to make sure that these artifacts that belong to Iraq are returned to Iraq.
U.S. officials say this move shows that U.S. relations with Iraq go beyond the military partnership between the two countries.
We have so many more aspects of our relationship, including the preservation of heritage that's not just Iraqi, but it's global. It's for the entire world, and the Iraqi people are the stewards of it. So we want to help them in every way to do that for the good of all humanity.
U.S. and Iraqi officials hope that more artifacts taken from Iraq illegally will be returned to the country soon. Sirwan Kejo, VOA News, Washington.
Making headlines in Asia, officials in Thailand on Monday warned that monsoon rains may extend flooding that has already affected 27 provinces, almost one-third of the country's total. Over the weekend, the storm swept through the upper part of the country, causing flash floods that affected almost 60,000 families. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, China's central bank has declared all transactions involving Bitcoin and other virtual currencies illegal, stepping up a campaign to block use of unofficial digital money. The central bank complained Bitcoin, Ethereum, and other digital currencies disrupt the financial system and are used in money laundering and other crime. Prices for Bitcoin and other digital currencies dropped after the announcement. The People's Bank of China is developing an electronic version of the country's yuan for cashless transactions that can be tracked and controlled by Beijing. As cryptocurrencies come under increasing scrutiny from regulators across the world, in Lebanon, they are providing a lifeline for people trying to survive a paralyzed banking system and tanking economy. Jacob Russell reports from Beirut.
In 2019, the collapse of the Lebanese economy saw customers denied access to their accounts as banks imposed severe capital controls and withdrawal limits. Internationally, Lebanese financial institutions gained pariah status, making it difficult to send or receive money from outside Lebanon, another severe blow to an economy heavily reliant on remittances. Suddenly unable to access their own money, some, like Dr. Ferry Al-Helu, turned to cryptocurrencies.
Very catastrophic. I'm telling you, the feeling is that you cannot get your money. You are begging for your money. This is the most horrible feeling that you get. You are begging for your money.
The complexity and lack of regulation in cryptocurrency markets means that it is not a strategy without risk. In the US, Securities and Exchange Commission Chair Gary Gensler recently compared crypto markets to the Wild West.
The only reason I would say they call it the Wild West is because there is no support to call to get your money back. So you have to be a bit more discerning and a bit more attentive on how you use these products. And it's actually good for people to learn how to use things themselves.
When the very institutions that are supposed to uphold the system have been responsible for its collapse, the risk of cryptocurrencies can seem more acceptable.
The common US citizen or the Canadian citizen or the European citizen hasn't really went through the process of trying to withdraw his money from the bank and not getting a response on the other end.
Nader Dirani is a cryptocurrency supplier, helping his clients to access global crypto markets. His office is in a poor suburb of Beirut. The bank directly opposite is covered in steel sheathing to protect it from the anger of its own clients. For Dirani, there is more than just simple profit in his work.
Helping this community, it is one of my main goals, because every time new people know about this cryptocurrency, they will find out that they can own their own money. You know, they can do whatever they want with it. They won't be controlled by corrupted banks or someone from the government will take it back or seize it or something like that.
For Helu, previously unaware of the existence of Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies, they have proven invaluable.
For me, the BTC is the best way now. Best from banks, here in Europe or where everybody. It is very easy. You can create your wallet and you can transfer in a second to wherever you want.
In a market so subject to volatility, there will inevitably be winners and losers. But for now, cryptocurrency has given options to Lebanese who deal with volatility on a daily basis. Jacob Russell for VOA News, Beirut.
Finally on VOA Asia, women in Turkey's Kurdish-majority province, Diyarbakir, pedaled their well-decorated bikes to raise awareness about female cyclists in traffic. VOA's Mahmut Bozarshan filed this report, narrated by Izel Şahinkaya.
Wearing colorful outfits, dozens of women in Diyarbakir, Turkey, gathered in a public park to cycle as part of a campaign in 151 cities across 30 nations. It's called Fancy Women Bike Ride, and the campaign aims to promote urban cycling and awareness that women also ride bicycles, not just men, despite misperceptions in some countries.
I am an active cyclist, but there is no such bike awareness in Diyarbakir. When they see a bicycle, they honk directly. We want them to put on the brake, not honk. There is a gender perception in the society, as women do not ride bicycles, and we want to end it.
Some cyclists decorated their bikes before the tour with balloons, dolls, or purple ribbons symbolizing women's struggle. Participants said the tour aims to challenge the societal pressure on women in their everyday life.
We, the women, are everywhere. Today, we're on our bikes. Tomorrow, we'll be somewhere different. That's why we're here.
During the tour, women chanted some slogans and sang songs. The campaign was initially organized in 2013 in Izmir, a western province of Turkey, for World Car Free Day. Then it expanded worldwide as a women-only grassroots cycling event.
This event is a grassroots movement known as Fancy Women Bike Ride that started in Izmir and opened up to the whole world. There is no association with any group, and everyone here identifies as individuals. It has some goals, such as cycling, showing the visibility of women in society, leaving a clean world for the future, and addressing the climate crisis.
However, women had to ride their bikes under heavy security measures by the police because of reactions from some conservative religious groups. After the cyclists arrived at their finishing site, they continued their day with cheerful dances. Women's rights in Turkey have become increasingly controversial since the government withdrew from the Istanbul Convention, an international treaty to fight violence against women. For Mahmut Bozarslan in Diyarbakir, Turkey, Ezel Şahinkaya, VOA News.
Read and see more on this story at VOA Asia Facebook. Thank you for listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can also find us on Instagram, YouTube, and at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, Amy Hybels, and Doug Bernard. I'm Chris Cascale in Washington. Enjoy your day.